Eventually. I look again at the other students out the window. I feel empty, but they look normal. Happy, even. And someday, I'll be like them. Once this damn fog clears. So without another thought, I swallow the pill and let Kevin take me inside. Here's your schedule, Kevin says. It might be tough to pick up in your subjects where you left off, but your teachers have all modified their lesson plans to catch you up. I'll walk you to and from classes and attend them with you. Kevin's gray eyes look me over. I'm a little confused, I say. I take a deep breath and the white pill works its way through my system. My muscles loosen, and an overall feeling of well-being comes over me. You're doing great, Kevin says, patting my shoulder. I smile. Kevin seems genuinely invested in my recovery, and it's encouraging. I might really need the support. I walk into my first class, and the room is mostly empty. There's a girl with blonde hair near the front, and she says hi to me as I walk by. I smile in response, the small interaction confirming that I at least look normal, even if I can't remember parts of my life. I'll be in the back if you need me, Kevin says after I'm settled in my chair. He goes to stand by the bookcase, and I glance around the room, noticing the colorful posters on the walls. I can still remember my old school, how washed in white everything was. This place smells like vanilla, like aromatherapy. Are they trying to keep us calm? On my desk is a paper, just like on every other desk in the room. As students walk in, they drop their bags on the floor and fill out the forms, delivering them to a tray on the teacher's desk. I take a sharpened pencil from my bag and stare down at the questions on the daily assessment. They seem vaguely familiar. In the past day, have you felt lonely or overwhelmed? No. I fill in the rest of the ovals, pausing when I get to the last question. Has anyone close to you ever committed suicide? No. I pick up my paper, but wait a beat, feeling like I did something wrong. I look over the questions again, but can't find a mistake. At that moment, my teacher walks in, nodding politely at us as she does. When she sees me, she smiles. Sloan, she says, I'm so happy to finally meet you. The entire class turns to stare at me, curious expressions on their faces. The day has taken on a dreamlike quality as I float to the front to put my paper on the pile. But unlike the other students' assessments, my teacher stops to look over my answers. When she's done, she smiles. Good girl, she says, and then she turns to write on the board. Kevin leads me to lunch and decides to pick out my food for me. He says that I need to keep my weight stable, even though a side effect of the medication is loss of appetite. As he tells me this, I realize that he's right. I can't remember the last time I was hungry. I sit at a table, alone, and peek out at the cafeteria. Kevin is leaning against the wall, silently taking in the room. There are three other handlers in here, watching their charges. Dr. Warren told me that a handler would shadow me for a few weeks after I'm released, and then monitor me for 6 after that. I'm on day 2. Can I sit? I jump and see a girl standing there. She's pretty and blonde, and I recognize her as the girl from my first period class who said hi to me. Sure, I say, although she's already sat down across from me. I'm lazy, she says, her voice deep and raspy like an old-time movie star. In front of her, she unrolls a brown paper bag and pulls out a package of orange cupcakes. I look down again at my lunch tray and the slab of meat on it. You're Sloan, right? She asks. I must look surprised that she remembers because she shrugs. New kid thing, she says. We notice all of the returners as they enter, sort of like, will they or won't they? Will they or won't they what? I ask. Remember. I'm convinced that eventually, one of us will remember something, and then the entire system will break down. What can I say? I'm an anarchist. She smiles broadly, and I like her already. She's alive. I can feel her vitality oozing off her. Lacey shoots a glance at my handler. They'll stop following you soon, she offers, tilting her head toward Kevin. As long as you don't mess up. Mess up? It hadn't really occurred to me that I would mess up or even what messing up would entail. I'm cured. But I lean forward to listen because Lacey's been in the program, has been successful at returning. Maybe she knows something I don't. I've been back for 15 weeks. She lowers her voice and brushes a strand of her blonde hair behind her ear. I'm still missing the pieces that the program took away. At first, I didn't care, right? I was just glad to have survived. But now I'm wondering about things. Did you know that they said I wanted to kill myself? She whispers, as if she's been dying to talk to someone about it. That doesn't even seem possible. I'm like the most well-balanced person I know. Did they say you tried to kill yourself too? I hold at my wrist, the faint outline of a scar still there. They say I did this. Wow. We're both quiet for a minute, absorbing our shared mystery. But then Lacey slides one of the cupcakes toward me. Hint number one, she says as she takes a bite of cupcake. Pack your own lunch. I'm pretty sure they put sedatives in the food. My sense of well-being has been interrupted by Lacey's suspicions, and I wish that I hadn't taken the white pills today. I'd like to be lucid enough to figure out if she's being paranoid. But for now, I take the orange cupcake and break it in half to lick out the white cream first. And then we enjoy the rest of the period, passing the time with safe conversations about teachers and music. The bell rings, and Lacey gathers all her wrappers, stuffing them back into the bag. I haven't touched the food on my tray, but I feel satisfied enough. When Kevin begins to make his way over from the wall, Lacey grins at me. Make him take you to the wellness center tonight, she whispers. I can meet up with you there if you want. Really? I can't help but smile. I've made a friend, and somehow that makes me feel better about myself. It's such a normal thing to do. 7 o'clock. Excuse me, Kevin states when he gets to our table. We need to go, Sloan. He takes the tray from in front of me, giving me a disapproving glance when he sees all of the food still on it. With one hand on my elbow, he gently guides me out of my seat. Miss Klamath, he says to Lacey in greeting. She waves suggestively at him, and Kevin shakes his head with a smirk as if he's used to her antics. Before I can even say goodbye, Lacey is gliding across the cafeteria and out of my line of vision. When she's gone, Kevin drops his hand from my arm. I'm glad you're making friends, he says. It's good for your recovery. What's the deal with the wellness center? I ask. Can I go there tonight? The wellness center was developed by the program as part of the aftercare, a way for you to interact with others, including non-returners, in a safe, monitored environment. If you'd like to check it out, I think that would be okay. Let's just be sure you're not overdoing it. Too much stimulus can disrupt the healing process. In fact, Kevin slips a pill box out of his pocket, taking out the white pill. Here, you haven't had a dose since this morning. You might start feeling on edge if you don't. I consider it. What happens if I don't do exactly as I'm told? Would refusing be considered messing up, especially on the second day? I glance around the room, wondering if the other returners felt this lost when they first came back. But I learn nothing as they all grab their backpacks and dump their trash, heading for their classes. And so I swallow the pill. Chapter 2. When my handler drops me off at home, saying he'll be back at 6:30, I immediately start on my homework. Although I feel as if I know the answers, some of the questions get muddled in my head. Especially when it comes to math, it's as if certain rules were erased, leaving me with partial answers. Eventually, I get frustrated and slam my book shut before turning on the television. I'm not surprised to see a Dateline special about the program. It seems to dominate every channel. Even on MTV, what used to be ruled by trashy reality shows is now filled with inspirational stories of teens being saved by the program. I half wonder if the program is sponsoring the network now. Just then, the interviewer from Dateline walks into the facility, the same facility that I was in. I sit up straighter, my heart pounding. I think I see Nurse Kell dash out of the corner of the screen, and then the view is filled with security guards.
"You can't be here,"
the security guard says, pushing the camera away with his hand.
"You have to leave."
The interviewer continues arguing until the sound is promptly shut off. The screen is black, and I wait, wondering what happened. Instead, the interviewer is behind a desk, shaking his head.
When asked to comment, the president of the program, Arthur Pritchard, released this statement. "The effectiveness of the treatment, which is still at 100%, is dependent on the privacy of our patients. Any interference could jeopardize the life of the minors, and therefore we cannot comment on the treatment or allow common access to our facilities at this time."
I click off the television, wondering what it was like when those reporters tried to get into the program. Were Shep and Derek around? It had seemed so isolated when I was there. Maybe things are changing. And for a second, I'm afraid. If they stop the program, leaving us as the only ones changed, what will happen? Will we be discriminated against forever? Does that mean there's something wrong with us? I start to panic when, all of a sudden, the warm water is splashed over me again, and I take a deep breath. The fear is gone, and instead I just close my eyes and lean my head back against the couch cushion. Something about sitting here in my familiar living room is comforting, and yet I can't help but think I should be doing something different. As if this is real, and at the same time, not. I'm relieved when my mom gets home with groceries, and I help her unpack them, thankful for the distraction.
"So how is the first day back?"
my father asks from across the dinner table. His eyes are bright, and he's smiling as he takes a bite of steak. The way my parents watch me is like I'm a miracle returned from the grave. They hang on my every word. "It was good," I tell him. "A little scary at first, but I made a friend." My mother beams, and she sets down her silverware.
"You made a friend already?"
She and my father exchange an eager glance. It makes me feel like a huge loser that my parents could be so happy about me making one friend.
"Her name is Lacey," I say. "She sat with me at lunch."
My mother pauses, then puts a large cut of steak into her mouth. I wait for her to ask questions, but she doesn't. I stare down at my plate, and near my glass is another white pill. I decide that I don't like this fog anymore. I decide I'm not going to take it. "I'm meeting Lacey tonight at the wellness center," I add quietly, taking a sip from my water. "The handler said it was healthy for me to socialize."
"I agree,"
my father says, sounding a little too upbeat. I'm struck with a sensation, an outsideness. My parents are acting weird. Or maybe I'm the one who's weird now. I want to excuse myself to my room, but my mother starts talking about the program again. She tells me that in the UK they had their first class of patients released. She seems so proud of that fact, as if returners are elite somehow. I nod along, my mind racing. I try to remember my life just before the program, but all I get are repeats of old memories. My father taking me and Brady for ice cream. My mother sewing a Halloween costume. The repeating starts to make my temples pulse, and I stop trying to think back, worried I might be doing damage. Dr. Warren had been adamant about maintaining. She warned me that too much stimulus could affect the reconstruction they'd done on my mind. She said it could result in a break in reality, causing permanent psychosis.
But what if she was lying?
Sloane, my mother interrupts my train of thought. You haven't touched your food.
I meet her concerned stare and then apologize, cutting a piece of meat. I can barely choke it down, especially when I notice a chalky aftertaste. Something Lacey said pops in my head. I think they put sedatives in the food. When my mother starts talking again, I wipe my mouth with my napkin, careful to spit out the food. Maybe I'm being paranoid. Maybe I'm losing it altogether. But instead of mentioning it, I ask if I can be excused to get ready for tonight. My parents look disappointed, but then my mother reminds me to clear my place. And don't forget your pill, she adds when I start toward the kitchen. I grab it quickly and toss it into my mouth. But the minute I get into the kitchen, I spit it in the sink and scrape my food into the disposal. And then I grind it all to bits. I pose in front of the mirror, turning from side to side to evaluate myself. My closet had been emptied and replaced with new clothing, the tags still on them. It seems strange to me that they'd get rid of all my things, my entire wardrobe. Did they think an old t-shirt could send me into an emotional tailspin? Did I dress in all black and overline my eyes? I don't remember. So right now, I'm wearing a pink button-down shirt that feels too stiff, paired with a khaki skirt. I look painfully average. Taking the brush from my dresser, I run it through my hair, sliding one side behind my ears when I'm done. It's nearly 6:30 and Kevin will be here soon to take me to the wellness center, but worry has started to work its way into my consciousness. What goes on at the wellness center? And what will the people who haven't gone through the program think of me? I'm different than them. I take a deep breath and sit on the edge of my bed, trying to calm myself. I think that I should have taken the pill because right now an inhibitor would come in handy. But then I remind myself that I want to know what's going on around me, and I'm not sure if I can do that if I'm medicated to the point of numbness all the time. Downstairs, the doorbell rings, and I cast one more glance at my reflection. "Who are you?" I murmur, waiting a minute for my mind to answer. But it doesn't. I don't know what I expected from the wellness center, but I certainly didn't expect this. I thought it would be more like the program facility, sterile and cold. But this place is crowded, people chatting and laughing. I try to relax into it, but I don't see Lacey right away. My anxiety spikes, but I try not to react. I don't want Kevin to know I didn't take my pill tonight. "So where do you want to start?" he asks, motioning ahead. "There might be some seats near the foosball table." "Sure," I say, lowering my eyes. Some of the people in the room have noticed me, and it makes me incredibly self-conscious. I'm not sure I'm ready for this. We start zigzagging our way through the crowd, Kevin's hand protectively on my arm. A few people say hi. When we get close to the table, I hear a loud laugh and look over to the couch, catching the back of a blonde ponytail. "I should be okay," I tell Kevin then, gently tugging my arm free. "I'm heading that way." I point toward the couch, and he nods. To my relief, he goes to lean against the wall near another handler, giving me a little privacy. "There you are," Lacey calls out, standing up to meet me as I cross to her. On the couch are two guys, strangers, and I nod politely at them. God, why am I so nervous? "Hey," I say as Lacey pauses to look me over. She immediately undoes the second button on my shirt before she smiles. "Sloane, this is Evan," she points to a dark-haired guy, "and this is Liam." "Actually," she says, leaning close to whisper to me, "Liam isn't even a returner. But he's not depressed, so no worries." I glance at Liam then, taking in his reddish-blonde hair, his dark brown eyes. He's watching me with a smirk on his lips, something about it a little unsettling. "Come and sit down, Sloane," he says, patting the spot next to him.
It's so great to meet you.
I dart a glance at Lacey, but she's already back on Evan's lap, chatting away as if this is completely normal and we've all hung out before. I turn and look back over the room. The wellness center is small, although lively. Bright colors, spirited games with laughing. Most of the people here are dressed like me, preppy and stiff. Then there are a few others, some with wide eyes as they search the room. By their comfortable clothes, I think that they're not returners. When my gaze lands on Kevin, he nods to me, as if saying it's okay to be confused. It actually makes me feel a little better. I sit on the couch, but flinch as Liam's thigh touches mine. My mind swirls through different memories, repeating some and reverberating them back to me. I remember camping with my brother, just the two of us. I can feel there's something else, but I don't have time to think about it when Liam leans his shoulder into mine.
So, how long were you in the program? He asks.
I'm almost offended by the question, as if it's too personal for someone I just met to ask me. But I'm probably being overly sensitive.
6 weeks. And they did something to you, right? Like, messed with your head or something?
Okay, now I am offended. Liam must notice because he quickly apologizes and shoots a cautious glance at my handler.
I didn't mean it like that, he says. It's just that I'm friends with Evan, but I didn't know him before the program. I'm just curious as to how it changes people. How it changed you.
I wouldn't really know, now would I, Liam? I ask. The fact that he's curious about me makes me feel like a zoo exhibit.
I stand up and back away.
Wait, Lacey says.
Where are you going?
I don't have anywhere to go. I'm overwhelmed and confused. I shoot a glance in Kevin's direction and see him chatting with another handler. I take it as my cue. It's hot in here, I say. I'm going to get some air. And then before she can argue, I walk away, careful to blend into the crowd so that Kevin won't try to stop me. I don't want him to see me this frazzled. He'll be able to tell I'm not medicated. I want a second to gather myself, and then I'll have Kevin take me home. I just want to think. I slip out the back door and onto the wooden patio. When I don't see anyone, I walk to the railing and exhale, closing my eyes. For the first time since arriving home, my emotions threaten to drown me. Dr. Warren had warned me about this. I'm overstimulated. It's like my body is revolting against me, and I press the heel of my palm to my forehead, willing myself to calm down. There is no threat. My feelings are just screwed up, resetting. I should have taken that white pill. Just then I hear the sound of the door and I spin around, expecting Kevin. But I still when I see that it's Liam.
I'm sorry, he says, shrugging. Lacey said you were mad and that I needed to come out and apologize.
I stare back at him, wondering if he knows that admitting someone made you apologize takes the sincerity out of it. It's fine, I say, more out of politeness than really meaning it. A crooked smile crosses his lips.
You know, I was worried you'd come back as some kind of zombie.
My stomach lurches and I steady myself on the porch railing.
What do you mean by that? I ask.
Did Liam know me? Had we been friends before and now I'm standing here like an idiot not remembering? Liam shakes his head.
Don't get upset, he says. You're going to get me in trouble.
He looks around before stepping back from me. A tear streaks down my cheek.
Stop it, he says, pointing at me. What the hell is wrong with you? If they see you like this, they'll send us both to the program.
But I don't understand, I say, wiping hard at my face. Do you know me?
No, you freak, he snaps, backing toward the doorway. And don't tell anyone that I do. Just stay away from me. I told Evan I didn't want to come here again.
My chest heaves with the start of a cry when someone walks over from the far side of the patio. I hadn't seen him sitting there. He leans his shoulder against the wall, not far from the door.
I'm sure you don't mean to be so rude, he tells Liam, looking him over. Unless, of course, you're depressed or something.
Stay out of this, James, Liam says, looking unsure of his path to the door now that the other guy is so close. The guy raises his eyebrow at the mention of his name but doesn't say anything about it. Instead, he takes out his phone, scrolling through it. I could send an anonymous note, he says, alerting them to your condition. Liam's face pales. Don't do that, man. I'm not sick. You can't...
I can't what? James asks with a smile.
I'm pretty sure I can. Look, Liam says, sounding authentically sorry for the first time. I don't want to do this again with you, and I don't want any trouble. She's all yours.
Liam holds out his hands as if he's offering me to this stranger.
I scoff, letting him know that I'm not his to give.
I didn't say I wanted her, James says from the wall. I was just making an observation.
Liam studies him for a second, as if checking to see if he's telling the truth, but then he slowly turns his head from side to side.
That's right, he says, mostly to himself. You don't remember either.
Liam looks alarmed and darts for the door. James swallows hard, but doesn't outwardly seem thrown off by Liam's words. And then, before another threat can be given, Liam hurries inside, not even looking back at us. My heart is still racing in my chest, and when I turn to thank James for sticking up for me, he pushes off the wall and heads for the door.
Thank you,
I call after him. He pauses for a second, his hand on the doorknob, but he doesn't turn to me.
You shouldn't let yourself cry, he murmurs quietly. Once you start...
He doesn't finish his words and instead sighs heavily. And then he goes back inside, leaving me alone in the darkening night.
Chapter 3 When I finally pull myself together, I go back inside the wellness center. It seems too loud, too alive, and I find the couch empty, both Liam and Evan now gone. Kevin is at the wall talking with Lacey. When I approach, he quickly straightens and walks toward me. I tell Kevin I'm ready to leave and then say goodbye to Lacey before turning and heading toward the exit. The crowd in the room is suffocating me as I try not to think about what happened on the patio. Try not to think that Liam might have known me before. He called me a freak. I notice the guy from outside, James, but he doesn't acknowledge me when I pass. I want to thank him again, but Kevin appears at my side, leading me away. As we reach the parking lot, Kevin stops me next to his van. Sloane, he says quietly, his face showing concern. Are you feeling all right? My lips part to answer. I don't want to lie, but I'm scared of telling the truth. When I pause, Kevin furrows his brow. Look, he says, I'm not supposed to tell you this, but I think if I do, it'll help you to trust me more. He waits a beat, as if trying to decide if he should. I was assigned to you for a reason, he whispers. I lift my gaze to meet his. What reason? Kevin looks me over and then shakes his head. Wait, you didn't take your pill, did you? I can see the panic in your expression. What reason? I ask again. Michael Realm, he finally answers. He's asked me to look out for you. I rock back on my heels. Realm? But why would you do that? He's a patient and... I've known Michael for a while, Kevin says quickly, and he asked this as a favor. He's hoping that once you're well, I can take you to see him. Off the grid. Kevin looks around once, as if he's worried about being overheard. It occurs to me then that he's breaking the rules, that he can be arrested for what he's doing. And I think that he's right. I do trust him more now. Thank you for telling me, I say quietly. And I'd like to see Realm again, but he told me I'd have to wait. You do, Kevin confirms, starting for the door of his van. But in a few weeks, you should be okay. Just don't... He stops to look around again.
Just don't do anything stupid. And whatever you do, don't tell anyone about this. You'll compromise us all.
I'll try.
The nerves in my stomach calm. The fact that Realm is looking out for me makes me feel safer. And it makes me miss him. I don't want to screw up my chances of seeing him again. Kevin and I both climb inside the van, and he starts the engine, glancing over his shoulder to back out.
Kevin, I say, let's never come back here again, okay? This place gives me the creeps.
He smiles and agrees, and then we leave the wellness center behind. Lacey is waiting for me outside of class the next morning. Kevin stands off to the side of the door while I stop to talk to her, and Lacey shrugs apologetically.
I don't know what happened last night, she says, quietly enough so that Kevin won't hear. But the way Liam tore out of there, I'm guessing he was a dick and you told him off. He can be that way sometimes.
It wasn't your fault, I say. He probably didn't even think he was doing anything wrong.
Lacey nods at this and moves over as several students file past us into class.
It's harder for returners, she murmurs. People know more about us than we do. There's no one to trust anymore. It's enough to make me...
She stops and looks to where Kevin is standing.
Never mind, she says, waving her hand. We should go in.
I agree and follow behind her. Kevin enters after us, taking his place at the back of the room. I look around again, thinking that everyone seems content, easygoing. But I didn't take my pill again today, and the fog of treatment is slowly clearing. Just then, Lacey looks back over her shoulder at me and presses her lips into a smile. She's not medicated, not like the rest. I wonder if we're the only two lucid students in this room right now. I begin filling out the daily assessment on my desk, lying on the first question, because I do feel anxious and overwhelmed. But I'd never tell them that. As I walk into my third period math class, I see a list of problems on the board. I take out my notebook after I sit and jot them down, hoping to be able to figure out at least one. Math is becoming a huge source of frustration for me. I'm lost in a calculation when a chair squeaks next to me. I look over, noticing him. James. He looks a little different in daylight, or maybe it's the fact that my medication has worked its way out of my system, letting images sharpen again. He has blonde hair, cut close to his scalp. He's wearing a short-sleeved, button-down plaid shirt that doesn't seem to be his. Something about it is wrong on him. It also doesn't hide the white scars on his bicep. I see him look at me from the corners of his eyes, but he doesn't turn. In fact, he just leans forward and then takes out his phone to text or play a game. I'm not sure. There's a strange mix of anxiety in my stomach as I watch him. I'm about to whisper a thank you, even though I've already told him. I feel like I should say something, but just then our teacher walks in and tells us to take out our books. I abandon the math problems from the board and open to the correct page. I sneak a look sideways to see James continuing to type on his phone.
Mr. Murphy, our teacher calls from the front, if you wouldn't mind.
She raises one eyebrow at him. James doesn't immediately react, and I shoot a look back to Kevin. My heart rate spikes, afraid that this guy is going to get himself thrown out of class. But before anything else happens, James slips his phone back into his pocket and opens his book, never making a sound. When that's settled, Mrs. Cavalier starts in on the lesson, and I try not to look next to me. When class comes to an end, James is the first one out the door. Lacey waves me over to her table when I get to lunch. Kevin tells me to go ahead. He doesn't offer me the white pill anymore, which tells me that maybe I never really needed it in the first place. Maybe they were just to keep me complacent. At home, my doses go into the disposal.
I sit across from Lacey, opening my brown bag. Now that I'm not taking anything, my appetite has returned. I bite into my sandwich as Lacey takes out her cupcakes, sliding one over to me.
Evan broke up with me today, she says conversationally. He said my rebel ways make him nervous. Which I think is funny, considering that he's the one who's best friends with a non-returner. That alone is asking for trouble. They're paranoid and dangerous. Hell, they spread suicide. And truly, Liam is scared shitless of us. I bet he's the one that told him to end things.
Liam's not scared of me, I say, taking the cupcake from the plastic to break it open. But that other guy might have worried him just a little.
I lick the cream and Lacey tilts her head questioningly.
What other guy?
I glance around then, trying to find him. When I see him sitting alone at a table, I don't mention it at first. Instead, I look him over. He's really cute, in an intimidating sort of way. His light blue eyes gaze out the window as he drinks from a carton of milk. I wonder why he helped me last night, yet he won't look at me otherwise. At just that moment, he turns to meet my stare, and I freeze. Across from me, Lacey laughs.
James Murphy, she says.
What?
Startled, I turn back to her.
She smiles. That's James Murphy, who you're currently eye-humping. He's in my science class, but he doesn't say much. And when he does, it's usually obnoxious or combative. I can feel my cheeks redden. I wasn't... I stopped to laugh. Okay, not the point. So, are you friends with him?
Nope.
She bites into her cupcake.
I'm pretty sure that he hates everyone here. He's been in and out of the office since transferring. I would have recruited him to my Lacey Against the World plan, but he's too unpredictable. He ended up assigned two handlers because he kept going off the grid. Can't believe they didn't send him back. Trying to keep up appearances, I guess.
She crumples up her wrapper, and I pick through the rest of my lunch, careful not to look at James again. If Lacey thinks he's trouble, that has to be saying something. But I might ask Kevin about him later.
Wait, Lacey says, looking up. Is he the one that scared Liam yesterday?
Uh-huh. I don't go into details, but I'm not sure why. It's like I'm suddenly protective of James's reputation, even though I barely know him. Still, I owe him for sticking up for me. So I don't mention that he threatened to turn a non-sick person into the program. That could get him arrested, I bet. Something tickles the back of my mind, but I can't put it into words, this odd feeling I have. A feeling that has no meaning because I can't remember what it relates to. It's like I'm about to discover it when a memory of my brother sitting alone at the table calling out fractions on flashcards echoes in my mind. I blink quickly and try to clear it away.
Well, who knows then, Lacey says, not noticing my temporary distraction. Maybe he's not a total tool. So, do you remember having any boyfriends or anything? Evan is the first that I can remember. Huh, how sad is that? He uses way too much tongue.
Ew. I pop the tab on my Diet Coke. Not sure I needed to know that. Lacey leans her elbows on the table, the smile fading from her lips.
They watch you, you know. They monitor us all the time, even when we don't realize.
A chill runs over me as I stare back at her. Her dark eyes are painted with blue shadow, the liner dramatically cat-eyed. Her blonde hair is flipped up at the ends, very preppy, almost comically so. It occurs to me suddenly that this is not how she wants to dress. That this is fake.
Are they watching right now? I whisper, suddenly paranoid as I lean closer to her.
The place isn't bugged or anything, but they take note of who we interact with, where we go. They're looking for signs of failure.
And if they find it?
Lacey straightens then.
We don't know. No one has failed. Yet.
I lower my eyes,
thinking that I don't want to be the first person to get sent back to the program. I don't think I could bear being locked up there alone. I feel fine, a little confused, but not depressed. Although, to be honest, I'm not even sure what depressed would feel like. Anyway, Lacey sighs as if wanting to go back to the easy conversation. If you want me to introduce you to James, I can. I shake my head, trying to relax the tension that is now squeezing my shoulders. That's okay, I say. I doubt he's my type. Lacey snorts.
How would you know? I'm sure they've wiped out your dating history, too.
She's right. I don't know anything about myself anymore. I don't even know if I've had a boyfriend before.
Maybe you like dudes on motorcycles, Lacey grins. Or super nerdy guys.
She giggles, but it's deep and throaty.
I'll tell you one thing. Now that I'm free to date, I'm gonna try all 31 flavors. It's like I have a clean slate. I'm a born-again virgin.
Just remember that some of those 31 flavors will be disgusting, I say. Like, who would be the pistachio cream?
Lacey smiles. Already had him.
I laugh again, shaking my head. Have you ever asked anyone about your past? About who you dated before? Lacey seems to freeze at this.
I did, actually. And my parents nearly died when I brought it up. They wouldn't tell me a thing. Everyone else ignored the question because they didn't want to get flagged. You know that, right? If anyone tells you about who you were, what you did before the program, they can get flagged or arrested for messing with a returner.
I lower my eyes, the thought troubling me. The fact that the program has such complete control of what and who we're exposed to.
Lacey continues. After all the strained glances between my parents, I finally just went to search my room, looking for anything, a picture, a birthday card. But it's all gone. Probably a good thing, though. I mean, how healthy could my past relationships have been if I was suicidal?
She has a valid point. Still, I say, I'd like to know. It just seems weird that other people can know and not tell me.
Lacey pushes her lunch bag away and levels her stare at me. It is weird. And trust me, it doesn't get any less weird. But there are a lot of sick people out there. You and me, we're not like them anymore. Sure, I get a little irritated when I can't remember something, but I'm not trying to slash my wrists either. The program worked. For better or for worse.
Truly, she says, looking down. I'm not sure which it is. The expression that crosses her features is one of regret with a touch of sadness. I glance over at Kevin, hoping he hasn't noticed Lacey's change, but he's watching us. He's clearly seen.
I did meet a guy while I was at the program, I offer, completely downplaying how complicated my and Realm's relationship was to make it sound like gossip. With that, Lacey's lips twitch with a smile.
Really now? That is scandalous, Sloane. A boyfriend?
No, just a friend.
Lacey crinkles her nose as if I have disappointed her.
But, I add, he was the type of friend I'd sometimes kiss.
The bell rings overhead and I straighten, glad I snapped her out of whatever she was thinking about. She smiles broadly at me. I have to go, she says, standing. My chem teacher is giving me a hell of a time about not catching up. Maybe she'll eventually take the hint that I hate science and have no plans to ever catch up. She sighs and then waves before turning to leave.
I wait a minute, still taking in what Lacey had told me about being monitored, about nobody telling us who we used to be. I thought being clear-headed would help me figure stuff out, but instead, it's only made it more confusing. Just then, Kevin appears at the end of the table.
Do you monitor me when I don't know? I ask quietly.
Yes. Tiny pinpricks of realization slide over my skin, and I nod, acknowledging that I heard him. It's a helpless feeling. But, he continues,
I try not to notice when you break the rules, like slipping out of the wellness center when you think I'm not looking.
Oh. I feel exposed, but it also affirms to me that Kevin isn't the bad guy. At least, not that I can tell. And if Realm sent him, I should trust that. I should trust Realm. Chapter 4. The minute I get home from school, I run to my bedroom and begin searching. The place still looks mostly the same as I remember it, except maybe a little cleaner. Although I can tell that things are missing, I have no idea what they could be. I open drawers, push aside the new clothes in my closet, but there are no hints that I ever had a social life. Either I was a nobody, or I had to have the people around me erased. "Damn it," I say as I slam the drawer closed. I just wanted something, anything, to give me a clue to what I was like before. I take a minute to look around, see if I missed anything, when I hear my mother call me from downstairs. "Sloane," she says. "Dinner." I head for the door, disturbed that I didn't find anything, not even a picture. It's like someone came in here and swept it all away. What worries me most is the idea that I was ever sick enough to be sent away in the first place. It doesn't seem possible. My father is working late, so it's just my mother and me. I poke at the fried potatoes on my plate. I want to ask her about my past, but I'm afraid that she won't tell me, and that she will. What if knowing really will make me sick again?
"So, how is school?"
she asks. "Settling in okay?"
"Pretty good, I guess,"
I chew slowly.
"Mom, what happened to all my clothes?"
"We got you new ones. Do you not like them?"
"No, they're fine. I just wonder what my old clothes look like."
"Pretty much the same. But Dr. Warren suggested that we get you a new wardrobe to give you a fresh start. If you don't like them, we can go shopping after school." She smiles. "That might be fun." A fresh start. My heart rate begins to speed up. "Great," I say half-heartedly. "But I was wondering," I swallow hard, "would you tell me if I asked if I ever had a boyfriend?" My mother doesn't noticeably react as she cuts into her chicken.
"Sure, honey,"
she says, not looking up. "You did date a little, but nothing serious." Oh. I can't explain why, but that answer makes me feel bad.
"Friends?"
I ask. My mother bristles then.
"What's this about, Sloane? You should be worried about the present, not the past."
"You're right," I say, just to get rid of the crease between her eyebrows. We start eating again, and after a minute I smile. "Do you know anything about a James Murphy?" I ask, cutting into my meat. My mother looks up at me.
"No, is he a classmate of yours?"
"We have math together, and my friend said that he'd been in the program just before me. He sounds kind of bad." I laugh. My mother nods, smiling kindly.
"Then that should be a real sign to steer clear of him, don't you think? The last thing you need so soon after returning is more problems. You have to remember that you were unwell and now you're cured. You're not supposed to dwell on the past. You're supposed to be focused on now."
"I'm not dwelling," I say, my face stinging from her scolding me. "I don't have a past. Can you understand how confusing that is?"
"I'm sure it is, but they took the memories that were corrupted. And if you keep digging around in your head, reality is going to slip away. The doctor told us."
"How do you know they only took the bad memories?" I challenge. "I can't remember anything. I don't even know what happened to Brady, only that he's dead. What happened to him?"
"He drowned,"
my mother answers simply, as if that in itself is an explanation. I knew this already. Dr. Warren had told me in a therapy session, but there were never any details.
"How?"
"Sloane," my mother says in a warning voice.
"Who's to say they only erased what they were supposed to?" I ask. My life has so many holes in it, and this discussion is over, my mother says quickly.
I meet her eyes over the table, and I can see she is in full panic mode.
You tried to kill yourself, Sloane. They told us you were resistant in the program, too. We could have lost you, just like we lost your brother. The program kept you alive, and for that I'm blessed. Any inconvenience you may feel now will fade soon enough. And if you just can't bear it, maybe we should call the doctor and see if there is another treatment available. I can't go through this again.
She starts to cry.
I just can't.
My mother pushes back from the table, leaving her barely touched food behind as she heads toward her bedroom. I feel guilty, as if I'm just a problem that continues to repeat itself. And so with that, I toss my napkin down and retreat upstairs. It's an hour later when my mother knocks at my door, asking if she can talk to me. I let her in, still hating that I upset her. She looks older than she does in my memories, making me think the way I remember things isn't accurate at all.
About your brother, she says, coming to sit next to me on the bed.
It was a very tragic loss, Sloane. One we'd all prefer to forget.
What happened to him?
Chills spread over my body.
Brady was a great swimmer. How could he drown?
It was a rafting accident, and your doctors had to take the memory because it was very traumatic for you. They felt it contributed to your illness.
I hadn't considered that my brother might have hurt himself. Brady wouldn't do something that selfish. He loved us. We were happy.
I miss him, I tell my mother, looking at her. She blinks back her tears and smiles sadly.
I miss him too. But we had to move on as a family. Your brother drowned in that river and it devastated us. Still, we've found our peace again. Please don't make us relive the pain. Do you promise?
There's a tightness in my chest, and I think what she's asking is unfair, especially because I can't remember losing my brother. I need a little more closure, a chance to grieve now that I'm home. But instead, I just nod, and she pats my thigh.
Now, she says, as if everything is cleared up, tell me again about all these friends you're making.
Oh, I furrow my brow, surprised by the subject change. Well, it's only one friend. The girl Lacey I told you about? She's really nice. I think you'll like her. I'm not sure that's true, but I'm hoping it'll make my mother less cautious with me. I was hoping that maybe she could come over for dinner one night.
My mother presses her lips together, thinking. Maybe in a few weeks, when things settle down.
I don't like her answer, but I don't tell her.
And the boy? She asks offhandedly.
I laugh. There's no boy. I was just wondering about someone in my math class. It's no big deal.
My mother smiles, but it looks forced, and I feel my heart sink. She's not going to let Lacey come here, and she certainly isn't going to let me date anyone, possibly ever. I'm starting to think that I need to find Realm. I'm not sure there is anyone else I can confide in. He'd told me to wait to find him, but I can't. I need someone to talk to, someone who will understand. I wonder if Kevin will take me to him now. My mother reaches out to brush my hair behind my ear. I'm glad we had this talk, she says, gazing at me lovingly. We're so happy to have you home, honey. You have no idea how much we've missed you. I tell her I missed her too, but really I'm thinking about the ache that has started deep in my chest, a pain that I can't place and I can't understand. It's like longing, whether for myself or someone else, I don't know. There is a part of me missing, and no matter what I do, I'm not sure I'll ever fill it. It's nearly a week later, and I'm in math class again. Kevin told me that I wasn't ready to see Realm because I haven't healed yet, and it's imperative for my brain to do so. He reminded me that although he's looking out for me as a favor for Realm, he really is concerned for my health,
and that it is his first priority. James Murphy sits in the desk next to me, paying attention as our teacher continues to talk. I lower my head, letting my hair fall forward, blocking the right side of my face enough so that I can stare at James through my dark hair. The scars on his bicep are white, but they've got a weird crisscrossing pattern. I can't figure out what could have caused that sort of injury, but it's not angry and pink like a normal scar. Is it a burn? James glances sideways, catching me looking at his arm. His face is expressionless, and he turns back to the front as if he didn't notice me at all. I swallow hard. I go back to my notebook and copy down a few problems from the board. I look at Kevin, who's staring out the window, daydreaming. I peek at James again, the thought that he refuses to acknowledge me making me that much more curious about him. And although I'm not checking him out, I do notice how attractive he is. I mean, I can't really miss it. He isn't overly styled. In fact, his chin is unshaven, the stubble there a little darker than his hair. When I look at his mouth, there's a ghost of a smile there, even though he's staring straight ahead. James leans forward and turns the page of his notebook, jotting something down quickly. I watch as he turns the spiral-bound notebook sideways, continuing to stare ahead. I'm not sure what he's doing when he silently taps his finger on the page. I realize suddenly that he wants me to read it. I lean over slightly. "Why are you staring at me?" He darts a glance in my direction, and I can feel the heat in my cheeks, my embarrassment getting the best of me. I shrug. James nods and goes back to his notebook, scribbling something else before turning it toward me. "It's giving me a complex." A laugh escapes from my lips, and I quickly cover my mouth. Nearly half the class turns toward the sound, but James is the picture of innocence as he flips back to his original page and folds his hands in front of him. "Is there a problem, Sloan?" the teacher asks. Within seconds, Kevin is standing at my side, looking concerned. "No," I say. "I'm sorry, I choked on a piece of gum." "Perhaps that's why we don't allow gum in the classroom," the teacher responds, sounding annoyed at the interruption. "Are you not feeling well?" Kevin whispers. "Maybe we should go out into the hall for some air." "No," I say instantly. "I'm fine, really." Kevin shoots a nervous look at James, and then walks to the front and interrupts our teacher mid-sentence. I don't dare turn to James, but I can feel him watching me. "Of course," the teacher says to my handler. "Sloan, can you come sit in the front, please?" I gather my things quickly and take an empty desk directly to the side of the teacher. I sit there for the rest of class, feeling kind of humiliated, but maybe just a little bit charmed. After class, Kevin pulls me aside and levels his stare on mine. "What was that about in there?" he asks. I laughed. "It's not a huge deal." I don't appreciate him being so nosy, but then I think that a regular handler might be a lot more intrusive than Kevin's being right now. "Do you know James Murphy?" he asks.
"No."
Kevin exhales as he straightens. "Then let's keep it that way. James isn't the sort you want to get to know, Sloan. I can't protect you if you're going to go down that path."
"And what path is that?"
"A self-destructive one. Just promise me you'll stay away from him, please." I don't like being told who I can and can't associate with. But Kevin's eyes are pleading with me, so I nod, even though it's going to be a hard promise to keep.
Chapter 5. Lacey has taken up permanent residence across from me at the lunch table, always sharing her cupcakes, always entertaining me with her stories about guys. I haven't been back to the wellness center since that first time, and Lacey hasn't mentioned meeting her there again. I just hope my mother will eventually let her come over to our house.
"Oh," Lacey says, biting into the orange frosting. "I ended up having coffee with a new guy last night. She beams.